Good. Turl also scanned the compound corridors. They were empty in the berthing areas during work time. Working fast, Turl looked from a stilled picto-recorder frame of Zt to the mirror before him and began to apply makeup. He thickened his eye bones, added length to his fangs, roughed the fur on his cheeks, and labored to get the resemblance exact. What a master of skills one had to be in security. Made up, he donned the work coat and cap. He took 500 credits in bills from his own wallet. The top one he marked, "Good luck," very plainly. He scribbled several different names on it with different pens. He connected a remote control to a picto recorder that was registering the Champco room, checked everything, and checked the mirror, too. One more look at the live view of the garage. Yes, Zut was back, puttering around with a big motor. That would keep him busy for a while. Turl sped down the corridors of the berthing compound. He entered the smaller Champco brother's room with a passkey. He checked the drinking horn on the wall. Yes, it had money in it. He put in the 500 credits. He went back to the door. Ready. He touched the remote control in his pocket. Imitating the rolling walk of Zt, he went over to the drinking horn and with steady movements took out the 500 credits, looked around as though fearful of being observed, counted the money, the marked bill plainly in view, and then crept out of the room, closing and locking the door. A berthing attendant saw him from a distance and he ducked. He got back to his room and swiftly removed the makeup. He put the 500 credits back in his wallet. When the screen showed him Zut had gone for dinner, he returned the cap and work coat to the washroom. Back in his own quarters, Turl rubbed his paws. Leverage. Leverage. Stage one of this lever was done, and he was going to pull it, and good. 3. It was a night that was long remembered by the employees in the recreation area of the mine site. They were not unused to seeing Turl drunk, but tonight, well, the attendant shoveled panful after panful of Kerbango at him, and he took them all. Turl had begun the evening looking depressed, and that was understandable since he wasn't very popular lately, if he ever had been. Char had watched him slit-eyed for a while, but Turl was obviously just bent on getting drunk. Finally, Turl seemed to rouse himself and did a bit of paw-gripping, a game whose object was to see which player couldn't stand it anymore and let go, with some of the mine managers. Turl had lost in every case. He was getting drunker and drunker. And now Turl was heckling the smaller Champco brother into a game of rings. It was a gambling game. A player took a ring and put it on the back of the paw, and then with the other paw snapped it off and sailed it at a board. The board had pegs with numbers, the bigger numbers all around the edges. The one that got the biggest number won. Then stakes were put up again and another round occurred. The smaller Champco brother hadn't wanted to take him on. Turl was usually very good at rings. Then his drunken condition became too alluring, and the Champco let himself be persuaded. They started by putting up 10-credit bets, steep enough for the recreation area. Champco got a 90, and Turl a 16. Turl insisted upon raising the bets, and the Champco couldn't refuse, of course. The ring shot by the smaller Champco brother sizzled through the atmosphere and clanged over a 4-peg. The Champco groaned. Anything could beat that. And lately, he had been saving his money. When he got home, in just a few months now, he was going to buy a wife, and this bet had been 30 credits. Turl went through contortions of motions, put the ring on the back of his paw, sighted across it, and then with the other paw sent it like a ray blast at the board. A 3. Turl lost. As the winner, the smaller Champco brother couldn't quit, and Turl had taken another pan of Kerbango, leering around at the interested gallery, and upped the bets. The onlookers placed some side bets of their own. Turl was reeling drunk. He did have a reputation with this game, which made the odds lower, But he was so obviously drunk that he even faced the wrong direction and had to be turned in the right one. The smaller Champco brother got 50. Turl got 2.
Ah, no. You don't quit now, Turl said. The winner can't quit.
His words were slurred.
I bet 100 credits.
Well, with pay halved and bonuses gone, nobody was going to object to winning easy money, and the smaller Champco went along. The audience roared at Turl's bungling as loss after loss occurred, and the smaller Champco brother found himself standing there with 450 credits. Turl reeled over to the attendant and got another saucepan of Kerbango. As he drank it, he went through his pockets, turning them out one by one. Finally, he came up with a single bill, a bit crumpled and marked all over.
My good luck money, sobbed Turl.
He lurched over to the firing position in front of the board.
Champco 2, just one more crap little bet. You see this bill?
The smaller Champco brother looked the bill over. It was a good luck bill. Mine employees taking off for far places after a final party sometimes exchanged good luck bills. Everybody signed everybody else's bill, and this had a dozen signatures on it.
I'm betting my good luck bill, said Turl, but you got to promise you won't spend it and that you'll trade it back to me on payday if I lose it.
The smaller Champco brother had gotten money hungry by now. He was picking up nearly 2 weeks' pay, and the wage cuts had hurt. Yes, he promised to do that. As winner, the smaller Champco brother went first. He had never been very good at rings. He fired, and, ouch, it was a 1. Anything but anything would beat it. Turl stared at it. He went drunkenly forward and looked at it closely. He reeled back to the firing line, faced the wrong way, had to be turned, and then, zip, he got off a sizzler. It hit the blank wall. With that, Turl passed out. The attendant, helped by the Champcos and Char and a couple of others, got Turl on a banquet serving trolley that groaned and bent. They wheeled him in a triumphal parade to his quarters, got the key out of his pocket, brought him in and dumped him on the floor. They were pretty drunk, too, and they went away chanting the funeral dirge of the Cyclos in a most feeling way. When they were gone, Turl crawled to the door and closed and locked it. He had taken counter-Kerbango pills after dinner, and all he had to do now was get rid of the excess, which he did, tickling his throat with a talon over the wash basin. Quietly, then, with great satisfaction, he got undressed and got into bed and had a beautiful sleep full of beautiful dreams concerning the beautiful future of Turl. 4. Johnny heard the monster enter the cage and close the door. In the past few weeks, Johnny's hands and face had healed, and his hair, eyebrows, and beard had grown out. His reflection in the water from the snow he had melted in a pan told him that. He couldn't see any scars on his hands, but they still looked red where they had been burned. He was wrapped in a robe, facing away from the door, and he didn't look around. He had worked late with the instruction machine.
Look over here, animal, said Turl. See what I brought you?
There was something different in the monster's voice. It seemed jovial, if that were possible. Johnny sat up and looked. Turl was holding up 4 rats by their tails. Lately, the nearby rat population had been cut down, and Turl had been shooting rabbits and bringing them in, a very welcome change indeed. Yet, here were more rats, and the monster thought it was a favor. Johnny lay down again. Turl threw the rats over by the fire. One wasn't quite dead and started to crawl away. Turl flashed his handgun from its holster and blew its head off. Johnny sat up. Turl was putting the gun away.
Trouble with you, animal, said Turl. You have no sense of appreciation. Have you finished the discs on basic electronics?
Actually, Johnny had. Turl had brought the discs weeks ago, along with some discs on higher mathematics. He didn't bother to answer.
Anybody that could be fooled by remote controls couldn't ever really operate machines, said Turl.
He had harped on this before, omitting the truth that it was he who had been fooled.
Well, here are some other texts, and you better wrap your rat brain around them if you ever expect to handle machines, mining machines.
Turl threw three books at him. They looked huge, but they were featherweight. One hit Johnny, but he caught the other two. He looked at them. They were cyclo texts, not Chinko translations. One was Control Systems for Beginning Engineers. Another was Electronic Chemistry. The third was Power and Its Transmission. Johnny wanted the books. Knowledge was the key out of captivity. But he put the books down and looked at Turl.
Get those into your rat brain and you won't be sending machines over cliffs, said Turl.
Then he came nearer and sat down in the chair. He looked closely at Johnny.
When are you really going to start cooperating?
Johnny knew this was a very dangerous monster, a monster that wanted something that hadn't been named.
Maybe never, said Johnny.
Turl sat back, watching Johnny closely.
Well, never mind, animal. I see you pretty well recovered from your burns. Your fur is growing back.
Johnny knew Turl had no interest in that, and wondered what was coming next.
You know, animal, said Turl, you sure had me fooled that first day.
Turl's eyes were watchful, but he seemed to be just rambling along.
I thought you were four-legged.
He laughed very falsely.
It sure was a surprise when you fell apart into two animals.
He laughed again, amber eyes very cunning.
Wonder what happened to that horse.
Before he could stop himself, Johnny experienced a wave of sorrow over Windsplitter. He choked it off instantly. Turl looked at him. Then he got up and wandered over to the cage door. To himself, Turl was thinking,
the horse is the key to this.
He had been right. The animal was attached emotionally to that horse.
Leverage. Leverage.
It came in many guises, and its use was power. Turl appeared to be laughing.
You sure had me fooled that first day. Well, I've got to be going. Get busy on those books, rat brain.
He went out.
That's a good one. Rat brain.
Johnny sat staring at him. He knew he had betrayed something, and he knew Turl was up to something.
But what?
Was Windsplitter alive? Uneasy, Johnny built up the fire and began to look over the books. And then he was gripped by a sudden wave of excitement. He had found uranium listed in the Index of Electronic Chemistry. 5. Turl was not at all surprised to see the smaller Champco brother come nervously into his office.
Turl,
he said hesitantly,
you know that good luck credit note you lost to me? Well, I won't be able to exchange...
What are you talking about?
Said Turl.
That good luck credit note. You lost it to me and I promised to exchange it with you. I wanted to tell you...
Wait a minute, said Turl.
He fished out his wallet and looked into it.
Hey, you're right. It isn't here.
You lost it to me playing rings and I promised to exchange it back. Well,